This is the Men's Group Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Gala. I'm a Men's Group facilitator. I also founded mensgroup.com. And, you know, our mission is to help guys navigate common everyday guy stuff. One of the most common situations that guys find themselves in coming into Men's Group is divorce or facing some kind of a separation, navigating a divorce, how to manage a divorce in healthy ways. These are all very common questions we get asked in Men's Group. And so I'm excited to have Ryan on today. He's a divorce lawyer in Colorado. And I'm going to basically fire a bunch of common questions that we get in Men's Group at Ryan, and then he'll educate us on some of the basics of how to go about facing a divorce if you happen to be in that situation. So Ryan, I'd love to start by just getting an intro from you.
Thanks, Sean. Excited to be here for some guy talk. My name is Ryan Kalamea. I am a divorce lawyer in Aspen, Colorado. I was born and raised in Colorado, and we have a firm that spans across the entire state. But I'm a ski bum that moonlights as a divorce lawyer. So made my way up the mountains, and didn't think that I was going to do divorce, but I enjoy working with people. I enjoy being in the courtroom and resolving disputes. And so over time, I transitioned from being a prosecutor and putting people in jail, essentially, into complex family law. And we have a podcast, Divorce at Altitude, but excited to be here with you.
Just for the record, your podcast is great for anybody there listening. Divorce Altitude podcast. I was a guest there talking about Men's Group, and I was just so impressed with what Ryan's doing. I want to have him on here. So Ryan, if it's okay with you, I'd love to start with just some more personal questions of divorce, since that's often what guys are coming to Men's Group for. Maybe not divorce specific advice or child custody advice in particular, but more how to navigate these things in a healthy way. So first question is, what are the best ways to avoid a divorce?
Well, I get asked this question a lot, and I think that it boils down to some common sense and some, it depends obviously on the circumstances, but I think that there's a laundry list, which would start off with make sure that you're taking time to connect with your spouse. A lot of us, we just kind of put our blinders down and really focus on work or something that is important to us. And we think we're providing for our family and our spouse, but really kind of carving out that time, putting away your phone, your computer, and really kind of carving out that time to really connect with your spouse. Complimenting, number two, regularly complimenting your spouse. I think, we are not programmed or we can take people for granted, but really programmed to compliment our spouse, who we might kind of be sick of. It's a little bit different than, someone at the bar or that you kind of the newness factor, but really kind of reminding yourself to compliment your spouse, every day, even just for simple things, dinner, making dinner, cleaning up, picking you up when you need it. Simple things, I think, really goes a long way. Taking care of your appearance. We just kind of let ourselves go. I think oftentimes in middle age and not caring and just walking around, especially in COVID, I love sweatpants, but get yourself some nicer sweatpants than just kind of the raggedy janky stuff that you might have kind of left over from college. Remaining faithful certainly is one of those issues. We are kind of, it's in our DNA to kind of spread our seed. And that is something that guys really struggle with. I think that there's some statistics out there that 60% of guys remain or are unfaithful at some point. So really kind of focusing on that and not putting yourself in that position. Doing stuff together. And on the flip side, doing stuff on your own. And, the codependency, I think, can be a crutch that ultimately breaks. And when it does, you're in a bad situation and you got to take care of yourself. So those are just kind of some things that I often tell guys in particular. And hopefully that's helpful for your audience in navigating that tricky, thorny issue.
How to Save a Marriage. Yeah, that's fantastic, Ryan. Good stuff. And so if a guy, and I would agree with all those, by the way, but that's, those are solid suggestions, proven, time proven suggestions, you know. I guess the next question would be, okay, so if a guy is facing a divorce, what are some healthy things he can do to weather that? I mean, we'll get into getting a divorce lawyer and all that stuff, but I mean on the personal side.
Yeah, I think the one of, it obviously depends on the person. You know, as I said, I'm in Aspen. One of my favorite guy clients, you know, he has an office nearby, and we are at the base of a ski mountain. And so he committed to doing 100 bowl laps, because we ski at Aspen Highlands, and there's a bowl. So you hike it. It's about 30 to 45 minutes of a hike. And he committed himself to doing 100 bowl laps in a season during his divorce. He's continued on with that tradition. And he nerds out and has a spreadsheet and really kind of holds himself accountable. I have another friend that was down in Houston, and he went through a pretty, you know, dramatic divorce, 4 kids. And he signed up for a kind of a challenge where I can't remember exactly what it's called, but it's the equivalent of climbing Mount Everest. And he went to Sun Valley. And I think physical challenges or physical goals is something that really guys resonate. I'd certainly not drowning yourself in booze, hookers and blow.
Yeah.
That is not going to be a productive way. It's tempting for a lot of people. I mean, you're under stress, and guys deal with that stress differently. But I think really kind of reconnecting with, you know, hockey or skiing or getting back in the gym or, you know, committing yourself to some hobby, cooking, you know, it can be a variety of things, but it just kind of runs the gamut. But I think if you're considering doing, you know, a meditation retreat or learning a particular skill, now is the time, because you gotta kind of focus on the stress and releasing that in a healthy, productive manner. And, you know, I think that we all have friends or have heard these horror stories of guys just going completely off the deep end. And that's just, it's just not gonna end up being, you know, sustainable.
You mentioned, you know, guys getting bitter going through a divorce, like, and I see a lot of that in, not in our community necessarily, but in men's group, but in other communities that men flock to when they go through separations or divorces, kind of like red pill, MGTOW, which stands for men going their own way. These are groups of men that just seem really bitter and angry and upset and just basically write off women. Is there anything you can recommend that that can help guys from stopping getting super bitter throughout the process?
Getting a divorce coach or engaging in counseling. I mean, listen, like divorce, it's like death, and it's, you go through the stages of grief. You are grieving for the end of your marriage, and bitterness is one of those stages. But as you mentioned, Sean, and I have certainly seen in my kind of professional life, guys tend to get stuck in that bitterness, you know, phase. And so processing it, and there's nothing wrong with being bitter. It's just a matter of you can't just wallow in your self-pity and your bitterness. I mean, a lot of guys will say, well, I made the money, and, you know, she gets half the money, or she gets all this money and she doesn't have to work. And that really kind of misses the point. You know, marriage is hard. And when you go through a divorce, a lot of people, more people than not, at the end, they'll say, you know, I'm much happier now. I'm a much better dad. I'm a much better friend. I'm a much better person. And, you know, the person that I referenced earlier, my guy that was, you know, climbing Mount Everest, he is a dramatically different person. I just saw him a couple weeks ago. He flew in. We went skiing, and, you know, he quit drinking, and it's been much better for him. He is in a good good, good place. And it took that flashpoint, that experience of divorce, which was unbelievably painful, for him to really change and become a better person. And so I think looking at this as an opportunity, instead of what you're losing or what you're missing, really looking at it as an opportunity to kind of, develop into a new and better person. Cause that's how you kind of have to see it, in order to kind of, dig yourself out of that bitterness phase.
So it sounds like to dig yourself out of the business phase, the next step would be taking responsibility for like your side of it, so that you can then learn how to be a better person, right?
Yeah, and taking responsibility for your side, there's going to be some blame, but really, if there's an affair, there's a reason in part. It takes two to tango, and there is responsibility all the way around. And ignoring your role in that, it could be just that it's time to move on. And there's nothing wrong with that. People grow apart, and it doesn't mean that you are, a horrible person. And I think if you look at it as a failure, that is certainly the path that, is going to lead you to some bitterness. Instead of, saying, listen, like, this is just a phase of life, and we went our own separate ways, and now we've got to kind of go through this process. But you're absolutely right, Sean.
Yeah. And one more like polarizing question on this that I'm just asking on the fly here, and you can feel free to opt out of it. But a lot of the guys that stay in that bitter phase, they play the blame game. They say women are all whatever. Women are all just using you for money. Women are all whatever. And I think it'd be interesting to get your perspective, since you're on the inside of this, dealing with a lot of men who've been hurt. Like, do you feel that's true? The women are what guys say that, branch swingers are using men for money, or these things that the red pill communities and MGTOW communities really stand by.
I think that is a recipe for a life of just, unhappiness. And, we all have accountability. And I think if you make these generalizations, are there women who are gold diggers? I mean, dude, I'm in Aspen, Colorado. So like, absolutely, there totally. Are young women who are absolutely out for nothing but dollars and cents. I see it every day. But does that mean that all women are like that? No. And I think it really is.
I know guys like that too. Yeah.
and like, I have clients who are the super turbo, loaded guys, and like, yeah, they pay for their women, and that it's an economic, model for them. But to see all women as evil is not a way to, have a productive, successful life. And I think you got to look at yourself and, your priorities. Does that mean that everyone needs to go and find, a second wife or a third wife? No, it doesn't. It marriage might not be your thing, man. And, but it you can, have sustainable relationships, and, it's really kind of a matter of priorities. And but I think that is, just a fool's path to take. Just that's at least from my perspective.
Yeah, it's an easy out. It's easier to play the blame game than look at yourself, and it's easier to stay hide from that potential future pain of re-engaging in relationships. That's what I observe, and it sounds like you're the same. So that's thanks for sharing that, Ryan. That's great. What common mistakes do you guys see making when they're facing a divorce and getting into a divorce?
I think it depends on the circumstances. I mean, there are, you look at divorce, and the major issues are split into kind of two different types. One is financial, and then the other is if there are kids involved. And so if we kind of focus on the financial issues, there are certain things that guys just, typically do that can really come back. And this is universal across the country and the world, really. And that is, when guys freak out and they are protective, they will, oftentimes drain that bank account and or try to really power themselves through, and they'll try to control the woman in, you know, with financials. And that can really come back to haunt them. On the flip side, I also see guys that just throw a ton of money to try to make the emotional issues just go away. And so they'll just, you know, spend a bunch of money trying to kind of keep the relationship. And it really kind of gets back to, like, if you have to buy your wife, you know, some sort of car or something, is that a relationship? Is that a sustainable model for your marriage? I mean, and generally the answer is no. And so oftentimes, you know, guys will really regret that. You know, there's other things that we can get into on financials, but for kids, you know, I think that when there's stress, you know, certainly if there's an emotional, if there's an argument and you lose your cool and you end up, you know, it ends up getting physical, that is something that, you know, typically guys are more prone to doing. And that is one of the worst ways to start off a divorce when domestic violence is involved. You know, telling the kids way more than they need to know. I mean, they're kids and they don't deserve your issues. And you got to keep that between you. And then I guess the other thing is, you know, really kind of not being engaged with your kids, because there's going to be a change if divorce is on the horizon. Then, you know, just thinking that the status quo, where you don't show up at the doctor's appointments and you don't show up at the parent-teacher conferences and you don't know the name of the doctor or your kid's teacher because that's just what she always did. If you think that that's going to continue and is going to be sustainable and you still want to be, you know, an active, you know, father, you need to change and you need to show up. I think that the final point I'll make is that I think oftentimes guys are really caught off guard in a divorce. I cannot tell you, Sean, how many times I've had friends, prospective clients, you know, just be completely floored by the fact that their wife comes to them and says, I'm unhappy. And then when they, in retrospect, they're like, you know what? I'm fucking miserable too. And, you know, that I think really kind of taking a step back and thinking, you know, about how, you know, your relationship is. And if you've been talking about divorce, a lot of guys just, you know, are naive and they don't think that it's actually going to really happen. But those are, you know, certainly some things, just sticking your head in the sand. Guys just typically do that. And the, you know, the wife, when she says, you know, hey, can we do therapy or we need to work on this? You know, they usually kind of make up their mind a year and then finally kind of pull the divorce card. And the guy will say, I want to try, you know, divorce counseling or try, you know, therapy. And the woman has, you know, she was done like a year ago. I mean, that's just a traditional kind of model or circumstance that I see.
Right. It seems like just different ways of processing for men and women. Like women, a lot of men get upset because the women move on so quickly. And it's like, how did they move on so quickly? It's because they started processing the breakup 6 months before they actually approached you, which sounds like it could be their fault, but it's actually your fault for not being attentive. That's interesting that you've observed the same thing, because I've observed a lot of that in men's group. So then when is it time to get a divorce lawyer? If a guy's kind of going through starting a separation with his wife, at what point do you recommend, you know, getting a divorce lawyer?
Well, the first thing is that, you know, you have to navigate some logistics and ask yourself, are you going to tell your spouse that you're going to consult with a divorce lawyer? Some guys, you know, they feel like they have to. Another is, you know, whether or not your partner has access to credit card or bank information to see when, you know, if you've paid for a consultation. But really, if you kind of get back to it, if in your gut, you know that this is inevitable and, you know, you start talking about divorce, she leaves you for a significant amount of time, I think it's definitely, there's really, in my professional opinion. There's no downside to going and at least consulting and understanding your rights. A lot of guys will walk into my office or will jump on a Zoom, for their consultation, and they just will feel so relieved because A, they have someone in, with their back and someone who understands them. It doesn't mean that they have to go through a divorce, but at least understanding what their rights are, and also just kind of having the kind of emotional support group behind you, because divorce lawyers are off, they're kind of this sideline quarterback directing everyone to their respective kind of places. And so, but I think if you know that a divorce is imminent, certainly you should go see a divorce lawyer. Don't wait to get served and just think that sticking your head in the sand is going to somehow change things. And really consulting. I mean, we have a divorce story, Eric Wolf, and it's him in a divorce counselor's office, or really a marriage counselor's office. And his wife says, I've hired a divorce lawyer. And then he walks out and hits the slopes, and he looks down at his iPhone and he sees his kids there and he starts crying. And then he realizes that he needs to go see a divorce lawyer. And that might resonate with some guys that, are listening in. And, really, it's if you're going to see a marriage counselor, then, that might be a clue that something is wrong.
Do you see divorces that end amicably, where it's pretty smooth and the couples just choose to go their separate ways, and they hire lawyers like you to help navigate the process, but it doesn't necessarily get bitter or nasty or vindictive?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, going back to our divorce story, it's about Eric and Melanie Wolf, and they both realized, Eric was, kind of watching TV every night and he'd slip into bed, and, Melanie and him were just never having sex. And it was very clear. It was a dead marriage. And, that doesn't have to mean, divorce doesn't mean that you have to, fight, and it has to be, War of the Roses. And I've seen, Sean, everything. I've seen guys flip wives with or spouses, a husband and wife flip respective spouses. I have seen people get divorced and get back together, and I've seen you name it, I've seen it. And people go on the Grand Canyon after they've been divorced with their kids. I've seen people move in across the street from one another. And it doesn't mean that you have to be at war for the rest of your life. I oftentimes will ask, clients, what do you want your kids' high school graduation to be like? Is it that you can sit next to each other, and maybe you have your new wife and, she has her new husband, and you guys, can amicably get along and you're, good friends? That's great. But what's the downfall, or the kind of situation that I, avoid or hope to avoid, is where they can't even speak breathe the same air. And, one person doesn't even show up because they're so angry. That's really a loss for the kids. And that is just not how, at least, I try to practice. And, there are different methodologies. There's a process called collaborative divorce, in which both the lawyers and the people commit to, being collaborative. There's mediation. There's a whole host of different mechanisms to try to reduce the conflict. And, at least here in Colorado and the United States, across the country, when you kind of have an adversarial system, where there's, husband and wife, and, you go to the War of the Roses, where, they're in the courtroom, that, kind of well-known movie. And like, you've got this confrontation that ultimately is counter to what's best for the kids, but it's just the reality that we're working in. But there are different mechanisms, by which you can kind of work through a divorce and make it less, amicable. And the final point is that guys really kind of tend to focus on the money And that, you know, oftentimes if guys are generous, especially if they're business owners, it's a savings in time. And really it's just money. But I will often tell mm-hmm. guys that are self-employed that they're going to take a financial hit in kind of over the next 1 to 3, maybe even 5 years, but in 5, you know, years or beyond, they're going to be financially in a much better position on their own. And when you kind of have that long view, I think it results in being okay with parting and kind of going back to your bitterness question. But I think it allows guys to kind of move on and be better friends and co-parents instead of kind of having that bitterness fester.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's great, Ryan. And switching gears a little bit, do you have any just general advice for guys that are approaching the child custody part of it? Because I know that's where things can get a little nasty.
Yeah, divorce is a change. And, you know, most guys, if we kind of do the traditional, you know, Eric and Melanie Wolf story, the guy goes to work, the wife, Melanie, takes care of the kids, and there's going to be a change. Being involved, showing up, not doing it in a manner where you're keeping score, but you really need to start showing up and you're going to have to start being dependable and you're going to have to, make some compromises when it comes to work. But, you know, not having that new girl, showing up at the parenting exchanges, yeah. That is certainly, something that you can wait on that. If she is all that you really want her to be in your life for the rest of your life, she can wait, 6 months, or a year. That's one way to really kind of, piss off, Melanie Wolf in, and the mom of your kids. And it's just disrespectful. Certainly limiting the amount of booze and other kind of, drugs. If you show up for, or have, your kids and you're drunk, it's a good way to lose them. So, it's common sense, but really, putting away your phone and, stop focusing on work, and you can be a better dad because, if you're going to get 50% of the time, that's probably, you're going to be more present and a better dad in that 50% compared to kind of being just around your kids all the time, but just being completely checked out and pissed off the whole time because, it's a bad situation.
Makes sense. That's great advice. Thanks, Ryan. And you mentioned just in passing there that you're in Colorado and the laws are such that because you're in Colorado, could you explain a little bit more about that? Like what figuring out what law applies, state to state or country to country and uniform premarital agreement acts and stuff like that.
Yeah. So, in Colorado, we have kind of an equitable division of property. That's going to be different than, and divorce across the, United States is going to vary really dependent on what state you're in. We have these general kind of understandings or general frameworks. So what's in the best interest of the child when we're talking about the children. And some states, Colorado is not one of them, use the term custody. And so when we hear custody, we think about, kids. But in Colorado, we don't use the term custody because we don't own our kids or we don't, it's more we parent. And so, Colorado is a lot more progressive than other states in terms of parenting for dads. So, there's no law that says that it's equal parenting time. There is also no law that says, that you have to divide the property equally. But, you referenced in passing the Marital Agreements Act, there are ways that you can kind of dictate what law is going to apply. And that's through a marital agreement or a premarital agreement. And you can have a choice of law and we can talk about that. But, really the what we've talked about thus far are just kind of general rules of thumb. If, anyone is listening in and they're looking at a divorce, they should, they need to go see a divorce lawyer in the state or province in which they are residing, because it's going to depend. And really they want to find a divorce lawyer that has some familiarity with the judge, because they're, except for in Texas, I think, you know, they're pretty much judge or bench trials. And there's certain elements, I think, in North Carolina and Texas where you can have a jury trial, but really you want to make sure that, you know, a divorce lawyer knows their judge. So you want to find someone that is local to your area.
And you mentioned, you know, premarital agreements. Could you share a bit on the prenup, postnup thing? Like, kind of explain the basics for guys?
Yeah. So I think that a lot of guys, you know, premarital agreements. I mean, we hear Kanye West, you know, holler, we want prenup, and you know, there's a reason for it, and they're becoming more and more common, and they're in the news all the time. I mean, Dr. Dre just killed it with the Super Bowl and, you know, halftime show here in the United States. And I mean, he's going through a contested prenup with his wife. And we hear about, you know, Donald Trump having a bulletproof, you know, prenup. And so we hear about it, but really talking about what it is a different thing. And it's essentially an agreement in writing where you and your spouse agree ahead of time on a division of property and or the amount of spousal support and potentially attorney's fees. Generally speaking, you cannot pre-agree about what's going to happen with the kids. And that's because, you know, let's say Dr. Dre and his wife signed an agreement in California, and then 10 years later, she has, you know, and they agree that they're going to, that she's going to get the kids all the time. Well, what if she has like an alcohol issue and she's just, you know, batshit crazy? It's just not good for the kids. So, you know, agreements on what's going to happen with custody and then also child support, those are generally not enforceable, but it's an agreement that is ultimately a contract, but it's a special kind of contract. And we can talk about the hoops and the things that you need that go into that contract in terms of making it enforceable. So there's not necessarily a bulletproof prenup. You know, they're oftentimes attacked, you know, Dr. Dre being, you know, a prime example. And there's, you know, examples all across. I mean, these celebrities we hear, and they're kind of fodder for the tabloids, but they often are attacked. And so guys should know what goes into a marital agreement or premarital agreement in order to ensure that there's a high degree of enforceability.
And just at a high level, like what kinds of things can be included in there?
Well, if you own a business, so if you're Eric Wolf or, you know, any of your guys are a business owner, what you can do, most states will recognize that property that was owned at the time of marriage is separate property. States can vary on what happens to that separate property during the marriage. So for example, in Colorado, any appreciation on that separate property. So if, you know, a guy owns a business and it's worth, you know, $5 million when they get married, then if it's, you know, $7 million when they go through a divorce, the $5 million is set aside as separate property, but the $2 million, it, you know, is considered marital. In New York, California, they treat it a little bit differently. But in a marital agreement, you can say, for example, that the business is your separate property, including the appreciation, including the gains. You can also have, you know, various provisions on what's going to happen, you know, if you buy a house or if you have kids. And so, you know, those are certain, you know, things you essentially kind of agree ahead of time as to what is going to happen in the event of a divorce. Another method or another common motivation behind, you know, premarital agreement and marital agreement, and I'll go back and kind of define that because I think that that's kind of, you know, helpful to know, is that if you have kids from another marriage, you can provide for them instead of, I mean, most states will have kind of, if you die, that, you know, your property generally goes to your spouse, and you can kind of dictate what happens in that circumstance. So, you know, a second marriage can really kind of be an avenue or a way for you to kind of say that you're going to provide for your kids, instead of, you know, your wife, your second wife. And so those are common mechanisms that you can do, but I think it's helpful when I say marital agreement and premarital agreement, you know, prenup, premarital agreement, it's an agreement that you do before you get married. And they're recognized across the United States, and I assume in Canada. And you know, you have to jump through some hoops in order for them to be enforceable. A marital agreement is something that you can agree during the marriage. So after you get married, the provisions and the hoops that you have to jump through are generally similar. And so sometimes if, for example, if money is becoming, you know, an issue in your marriage where you guys are fighting over money, she's just draining you of all your money. You know, you can agree in that circumstance, in a marital agreement as to what is going to happen. And that might alleviate some of the stress, that might ameliorate some of the disputes. And then, you know, you can say, hey, I'm really kind of committed, to this marriage now that my financial issues or financial concerns have been addressed. And if you do get a divorce, then that marital agreement will dictate, if it's enforceable, what happens to that business or what happens in certain circumstances. But again, as I said before, you know, the laws on enforceability of a marital agreement and premarital agreement kind of vary across the country. They are becoming a little bit more uniform, but it depends on where you are.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's great, Ryan. Thanks for laying all that out. And you talked about defending and attacking, you know, marriages, like methods of defending, methods of attacking. Can you explain that a bit more? Explain what that means and how do you go about doing that?
Yeah, so the easiest circumstance, okay, so just Dr. Dre. And, you know, his divorce lawyer is Laura Wasser, who's the divorce or the Hollywood, you know, kind of divorce lawyer. She represented like Angelina Jolie with Brad Pitt, and she's very well known. So, you know, he's kind of the perfect example where, and Barry Bonds, you know, the disgraced kind of slugger, he actually made law in California. The seminal case in California is based on Barry Bonds, and he went to Las Vegas. And as far as I understand it, you know, he got an agreement. But there were no lawyers involved, and he didn't disclose his assets ahead of time. So then she tried to go and set it aside. So she's attacking a marital or premarital agreement. So in Dr. Gray's circumstance, on our podcast, we've kind of covered this a little bit, but you know, his wife is essentially saying that she was forced into the agreement. And then she's also made these various allegations that she wasn't provided sufficient disclosures ahead of time. And then finally, she said that he repudiated or revoked the agreement. And I had a case where, you know, the husband and wife, they would constantly battle over the premarital agreement. The wife was just like, you know, this is a bullshit agreement, I'm so angry. And so, you know, they were at a dinner party, and they got drunk, and he threw it in the fire and said, you know, fuck this agreement. And there were people there. And so she then said, when they got a divorce, well, that agreement's not enforceable because you threw it in the fire. So there's different ways that people attack it. And it's usually the spouse that is the non-moneyed or the downward spouse. So if we kind of take the Eric and Melanie example, if Eric has a premarital agreement and he's a business executive or, you know, a software, like he owns his company, an entrepreneur, and he's going to walk away pursuant to the agreement with $100 million. And Melanie, meanwhile, she gets nothing under the agreement. Well, then, you know, she's got an incentive. Her back is against the wall. She's going to try to attack it and say this agreement is unenforceable. And that's essentially what happens, or is what's happening in Dr. Dre's circumstance, is, you know, he's got $1 billion and his wife is going to get nothing. And so she's just trying to get some money. And, you know, that is the, you know, why someone would attack it. And so you see these circumstances, and, you know, the general rule of thumb is if you have two attorneys on both sides during a negotiation with a premarital agreement. And almost all states require advanced disclosure. So you have to know what you're giving up. So a net worth statement, and states vary in terms of how detailed it needs to be, but there is going to be some disclosure ahead of time about, you know, what exactly the finances are. And then if you go through that, and it's done not on the eve of your wedding, and even if it is on the eve of your wedding, it can still be enforceable. But generally speaking, if the other side is given enough time to kind of consider it, they have a lawyer and they have, you know, disclosures, it's going to be enforceable. But, you know, the other thing is that in what we counsel our clients is, what is fair? If Melanie is going to leave her career and take care of the kids and you give her nothing, is that fair? You're asking for a fight in that circumstance. And yes. So if you say, you know, you leave your career because we have kids and I give you, for example, $100,000 per year of our marriage, that gives her some kind of equity, and you can say, listen, we're going to buy our house and we're the marital house because that's the house is going to, you're going to raise your family. And if pursuant to a divorce that she gets the house in that circumstance, that is going to be a more enforceable agreement or more defendable agreement than just saying that she's like kicked to the curb and she gets nothing, because ultimately the judge is going to be, thinking of the policy ramifications. And we don't want wards of the state. We don't want people on welfare because they signed a marital agreement. So a lot of times there are these ripcords or release valves that allow a spouse to get additional money in some way or manner. And like an example would be in Colorado. If there's a business and let's say it's, $100 million business, well, Eric can say that I'm going to get the business. And in Colorado, because that's property, that is enforceable. But then you get into alimony and child support, and the agreement could say that Melanie gets no alimony or no what we call spousal maintenance. But in Colorado, those agreements are unenforceable if at the time of the divorce, it's unconscionable. So if Melanie is going to be kicked to the curb and Eric's got a $100 million company, the judge is going to award her alimony, even if the agreement says she gets none. And it's because they're just trying to make it right and make her, at least somewhat financially stable in some capacity.
That makes sense. Okay. Yeah. And is there anything else guys need to consider when they're defending their marital agreements, or also even attacking them, trying to push towards a divorce and trying to get out of a situation?
Yeah, I think that, if there is a marital agreement in place, then oftentimes guys will know, that they are on what's going to happen, generally speaking. And, certainly guys come into my office and they'll say, here's my premarital agreement. And I'll look at it and say, listen, we're in good shape. And, hey, listen, you got some exposure here. And that I think really is helpful for guys. But, if you do get drunk and you throw your premarital agreement in a fire, you should probably go see a divorce lawyer or some lawyer afterwards to kind of, once the hangover of both what you did and the alcohol wears off. And I think really kind of consulting with a professional on what all is going to happen is really kind of helpful. But, it really kind of depends on the circumstances. I've oftentimes seen guys sign premarital agreements and they're way more generous in those agreements than they would have gotten, they would have ended up with in a divorce. But, it's one of those things where I think really going and knowing your agreement and following it, because a lot of times people will do it and then they will just completely forget about it, or not necessarily forget about it, but not, it will say everything should be separately titled, and then they'll go and jointly title everything, and you open yourselves up to some sort of agreement that you've abandoned the agreement. So those are, just kind of some tips for guys if they are in a circumstance where, there's a premarital agreement in place or a marital agreement and, they're looking at a divorce.
Yeah, makes sense. And just this is a bit of a rookie question because I haven't been through a divorce. It's like, when you say marital agreement, you don't just mean signing the marriage certificate, right? Like what influence does the marriage certificate and the ceremony actually have? Because you keep talking about marriage agreement, that's something separate. So what about the simple ceremony and signing of the certificate?
Well, so what most people or most courts, when they have a premarital agreement, there'll be this argument in particular by the wife. Okay. So Melanie says, well, there's no, it's a unilateral agreement and it's unenforceable because I gave up everything. And the kind of the rationale is, well, no one forced you to get married. And so by virtue of that wedding, then that is essentially the consideration is what we call it, for an enforceable agreement. So if you have a negotiated agreement, then most of the time it will take effect upon your wedding. But your question also raises another interesting issue, and that is in Colorado, and there's a couple other states, there's this concept called common law marriage. And so even if you don't have that marriage certificate, if you have a wedding or you hold yourself out as married, then that can be seen in Colorado, you are married. So we see the common circumstance where the older guy is hooking up with the younger girl and they're just boyfriend and girlfriend. And you saying, I'm not getting fucking married again. And then, they're together for a while and it kind of runs its course. And then they break up and she says, well, we were married, and she tries to make a run. Having an agreement really spelling out what happens, certainly protects. And there are things called cohabitation agreements, but most of the time when I say a marital agreement, it can be an agreement after that wedding. And, again, it can be an agreement where a husband and wife agree they're going to try to stay married, but that they agree that if one of them dies, that something happens, or if they get a divorce, that a particular kind of path is followed when it comes to dividing property.
That makes sense. Thanks for explaining that, Ryan. Great. And one last question for you, man, and that is, I just found this interesting, and because you're well studied on it. Could you explain the history of marriage and marriage contracts and divorce?
Well,
I just like some of the.
Yeah, first documented premarital agreement, I think it's really interesting and helpful for people to understand. I mean, the history of marriage, that's probably a little bit beyond what I am capable of answering, but the history of premarital agreements or marital agreements, it comes from, ancient Egypt. I mean, they have documented premarital agreements from 3,000 years ago. And there's a Jewish marriage contract that goes back 2,000 years ago. And if we look at Europe and the custom of dowry, from the 9th century, that also kind of set the ground or laid the framework for what we now know as premarital agreements. But really, the modern premarital agreement was developed in for second and third marriages, in particular in Europe, where the partners wanted to protect the financial interest of their children if they died. And so there was a desire really to spell out who got the castle and if a lord predeceased his second or third wife. And that's really, as I said before, a motivating factor for a lot of, premarital and marital agreements today, except for maybe the castle and lord part. But in the United States, they were enforceable when it came to kind of death. So if someone predeceased their spouse, then they were generally enforceable in dividing an estate. But up until the 1960s and 70s, they were not enforceable when it came to divorce, because they were seen as motivating or pushing people into a divorce. And, as we've kind of looked at the reality and millennials in particular, they are more open, if you look at the statistics, to premarital agreements because they've seen their parents go through a divorce and they're aware of the statistics. I mean, we all hear 50, 60%, and they just kind of know that the reality is that there's a good chance of them having a divorce. And they also, millennials tend to get married later in life. So they have more to protect. But really, in the 1960s and 70s, courts started seeing these agreements as being helpful to reduce conflict in the event of a divorce and didn't really see them as driving people towards divorce. And so, in Colorado, it was Newman v. Newman, which was an early 1980s case that was kind of the seminal case that acknowledged the existence of these agreements. But it's helpful to understand that because the way that the law works is what a court does in one circumstance is guiding on other courts. So when we hear the U.S. Supreme Court say this is what happens in a particular circumstance, everyone below that really starts taking their kind of guidance from what a higher court says. And so we are developing law as we go through kind of, from the 1960s and 70s. So the circumstance of, what happens if an agreement is signed, the morning of a wedding versus, other circumstances, what happens when someone throws an agreement in the fire? When you start having these decisions, then you start having predictability. And so really it's kind of a young or we're still fairly, new in terms of developing the law on premarital agreements.
Last question about divorce in general is, if at all, would you advise that guys avoid it if at all possible? Like, basically do everything you can to try to save your marriage, don't just throw in the hat just because it's going to be too much work kind of thing.
I think that's a tricky question, Sean. I know that I think it's like the Rockefellers where the old man Rockefeller said, just don't get divorced and, don't gamble. And certainly there's some financial considerations for a divorce. But I think a lot of guys and a lot of people that I see, they stay together and the statistics are pretty compelling when it comes to kids. We all want what's best for our kids. We want our kids to grow up and be well-adjusted and happy. And that is what every parent's kind of goal is. And so a lot of people will stay together for the kids. But the statistics are that if kids are raised in a dysfunctional, you got to think about what the behavior and the relationship model that you are setting. So if you are constantly arguing and you're just you're so unhappy, you got to ask yourself, is it worth it? And, I never recommend people get a divorce. That's just not my place. And it's not something I want, to be kind of seen as recommending. But I think a lot of people, they will stay together for the kids or because they're scared of the dating pool. And I think that that's really a personal issue. On the other hand, it's expensive, it's emotional. And when you have two households, you're paying two cable bills unless you've cut the cable. But, if you got kids, you've got two, milks in the fridge, you're paying for two different mortgages. And, that is just the reality. I mean, being married is one of the kind of best financial decisions that you can make. But if your spouse is contributing, nothing financially and just out buying Gucci and Prada, that is obviously a different circumstance. So I think it really depends and really kind of is a case by case scenario. In our story of Eric Wolf, which people can find on our website and Google my last name, and Eric Wolf, you can kind of get the feel for Eric's going to be in a better place. He was miserable. He was probably drinking and, he's not getting laid and he's just pissed off. And he's going to be a better person, a better, dad when he goes through a divorce, but he's got to realize that on his own. And certainly some, guys are going to be better off staying married and they just need to, take the hit and compliment their wife occasionally and say thank you and spend time with them.
Very well said. I love how you articulated that, Ryan. Good stuff. And lastly, you mentioned people can find you on your website. Could you spell it out for them?
Yeah. So it's my last name, Kalamaya, KALAMAYA.law. And there's no .com. So it's Kalamaya.law. They can also find our web or our podcast on divorceataltitude.com. Pretty active on LinkedIn. And if they Google Aspen Divorce Lawyer, they're going to be able to find us. But yeah, I'm happy to answer any questions, even if it's not, you know, something Colorado specific. You know, always looking to help out, you know, other guys. I've had, you know, former teammates, you know, Sean, you and I connected on, you know, hockey, and I played baseball in college. Yep. And have had various, you know, teammates and friends all across the country reach out to me, and, you know, ask for, guidance and advice, and, you know, happy to connect people with, you know, professionals in their area that might be a good fit for them, or talk to them about whatever issues they are. 'Cause it, you know, being a guy and going through a divorce, it's something you and I have talked about, and certainly would encourage people to listen to the episode where, you know, you and I talked about Men's Group, and how that can help guys going through a divorce. But, you know, there are common issues that we go through that I just don't think that really are appreciated by, you know, that many that have really kind of gone through it.
Yeah, true story. And I love that you're trying to help and serve wherever possible, Ryan. That's why I was so keen to have you on the podcast, and you didn't disappoint, my friend. So thanks for the time, and looking forward to chatting with you again soon, man.
Thanks, Sean.